It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Hello, 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 and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast, part of a 90-min network. Joining me today, we've got Blake, Tom, and Andy. How are we all on this fine Sunday evening?
Yeah, nice to have 2 weeks away from it all, mate, to be honest. I'm just relieved, if anything.
In a way, missing the Liverpool game, like, filled me with like hope and expectation, being like, oh, we only need to worry about one game. But this had enough worry in it for me. It was a drama-fueled lunchtime kickoff. That's the other thing that frustrated me. Before we get on to the game, it sort of just ruined your weekend if you're crap in the early kickoff, doesn't it?
It spoils the rest of the football, doesn't it? Because there's nothing... Like, you look forward to the 3 o'clock kickoff. Catching the end of the early morning kickoff when you're in the ground waiting. But obviously, there was no football to watch while we were waiting. So it just felt all wrong from even like an hour before kickoff. So it was never going to go right, was it?
No. I mean, it was always going to be a tall order, wasn't it? Let's be honest. It was always going to be a tricky afternoon. And I mean, when I saw the starting lineup and the fact that we weren't playing an out and out striker, I'm saying that. I don't know who we'd have played, but guys, what was your kind of impression of the squad and starting lineup?
Again, without someone up front, it's just brutal. I mean, look, it's a good enough squad on its own, and I think that we have, I think Aitnori was a bit of a surprise over Semedo, but beyond that, it doesn't look that bad. It's just not having someone as that number nine role. It's just killing us. And I think that going up against Man City, I think we all knew that this was going to be just an enormous task to begin with. And without a proper striker, I just think it was impossible right from the get-go.
Absolutely. I remember saying to my mom on the way to the ground when the starting lineup came through, I said, if we can keep this to three, it will be a moral victory for us. Because you look at that team and... there's just nothing there to really strike any fear into any opposition, let alone probably the best team in the world.
Yeah, I think if you look at the 11s as individuals, I don't think they're that bad, but that team just isn't cutting the mustard, is it, really? And I looked at the City team as well, and then I was even less confident. They still played everyone. I thought they were going to rest one or two. They started at Haaland, De Bruyne, Grealish, Silva, Foden, like literally all their best players. They didn't even play Ake to give me any sort of hope.
No, but there was nothing in that for a Wolves fan. And so, the way I see it, and I don't know if this is a good or a bad thing, but like that team would have struggled against Southampton, it feels like.
I think that's fair, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We'd be in the same position. We'd be like, still looking at going, how the fuck are we going to score any goals today? We talked about that it's not feeling positive going into the game, nor were we positive at half 11 when the team news announced. And I don't think many of us were positive at 29 minutes to one, when after, less than a minute, I was going to say the older enemy, Jack Grealish scores. I think Wolves touched the ball about once before the goal, whilst... Man City pretty effectively carved us up while we were still getting ready. Tom, what were your kind of initial thoughts on the goal? Because I think there were definitely things Wolves could have done a little bit better in terms of tracking runners.
Yeah, definitely. Was it highlighting the Athletic? I think they said Guedes didn't follow his man for the cross. I think Nunes had the ball, and I think, the only, very, very briefly, and it was only a slightly misplaced pass, but then out of shape, and then against Man City, they're just going to going to punish him. But I mean, I took my lad. So it was his seventh birthday, and I pre-warned him before the game. I said, mate, I said, mate, these are good. And literally looked at me like after 50 seconds, and you were like, yeah, bloody hell. Yeah, he didn't say anything, but I'm like, yeah, there you go. I told you, mate, they're pretty good, aren't they? And it had to be bloody Grealish as well, didn't it? Just so annoying.
I was going to say, we're sort of with that team right at the moment, aren't we? Where when you've got a player who's a bit out of form, and they see they're playing Wolves next, they're probably a bit happy. Like, I'm just glad that we didn't have Spurs this weekend and Son. It was like that sort of, oh, don't worry, we'll break the hoodoo against Wolves. But yeah, Andy, did you manage to get into your seat in time and things like that for it? Because, I mean, it was so, it was such
It was lightning, wasn't it? I mean, as you say, within 60 seconds of kicking off, we were kicking off again. It was ridiculous. I don't know what it was, but as soon as that pass was misplaced and you saw them break down that wing, I said to the guy next to me, they're going to score here. And they did. And I think the most egregious thing was Foden's back heel was the most telegraphed pass I've ever seen. You could see it coming from a mile off that he was going to back heel it. And there was no tracker. Ike Nouri got too tight to Foden, so he'd completely been cut out of the game. And then our centre-halves were just pulled apart. And I don't know where Johnny was trying to follow in Grealish. He was just too slow to it. And all of a sudden, it's off the post and into the back of the net, I think. I haven't been able to watch it back since. So I'm still quite furious about it.
No, that's a pretty good way of summing it up, to be honest. I think, yeah, for most anyone is not tracking Kevin De Bruyne. And it's like, it's Kevin De Bruyne. Like, just stay on him like a rash. But I guess you could look at it from the other side, that it was a really well-worked goal from them. They might not necessarily thought they were going to score inside 60 seconds, but it was still a high-quality goal that they must have like thought about how to pick Wolves apart, I guess. And I thought after that, we did seem to kind of compose ourselves for 10 minutes. Like, I thought we'd be completely shell-shocked. But one thing before I move on to the next goal is how physical Man City were against us in terms of giving away fouls and stuff like that. And not necessarily bad challenges, because we will circle back onto that one again in a second. But it felt like Man City were very much up for it, and we would, you know, we have had bitches on Saturday for it.
Man City have always been like that. They're just a physical team. And I think they take it right up to the edge of it going a little bit too far. They know where the line is and they take it right up to it. And I think that is a good trait to have in a team. Yeah, you might get the odd booking and red card off the back of it, but more often than not, you are going to win games for harassing and haranguing your opposition. And that's exactly what they did to us. They never really let us fully settle and get our passing game going at all.
No. Just tactical fouling, like Pep's king of it. He knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. They just rotate the player fouling. Was it the one when Moutinho had the free kick? Was it Rodri? I think he got, yeah, got done a couple of times. I think Nunes was in, or at least for a strike on goal. He knew what he was doing. He was only going to get a yellow card. So it's just being smart about it, and we're not. We haven't been for years, and the better teams are.
Yeah. I was going to say, we'll go on to tactical fouls in a second when we talk about Collins, but let's talk Haaland's goal, because obviously he is that guy at the moment. But I can't remember last time I saw Max Kilman defend that badly for a goal. I don't know, like, don't get me wrong, he's probably like, he's going to be one of the hardest players to mark out a game. But we talk about being physically aggressive and stepping up to the plate and, you know, being aggressive with them. I didn't quite get what he was trying to do, you know, turning his back away from him and just letting, you know, the Nordic meat shield rampage on goal. Andy, did you think at the time it was just a good goal from a very good player, or do you think we really should have done better overall?
Bit of both, to be honest. everyone sort of got turned inside out by Haaland, and he took his shot early, which the best strikers do. And I think that is why it seemed to go through Saar, because I don't think he had time to set himself to really save it. If he'd had a, you know, maybe an extra touch, I would back Saar to stop it. But it's just the fact that he hit it so early and so hard that Saar just never got a chance to steady himself for the shot. You are right, though. I mean, you back Kilman a lot of the time just to get in people's way and be a bit of a nuisance, and he never really got that chance on that goal.
Yeah. Tom, do you think, like, Haaland's two-footedness, like, I don't know, like, confused Kilman? Because he genuinely didn't look... Like, Kilman almost didn't look like he knew which way to go. And I've seen Kilman play enough times now that if he just needs to clear through the man, he will do. But he genuinely just didn't know what to do, which, you know, I think...
Yeah, I think...
YouTube comments, you know, it was a bad... It was only a moment, but it was a, you know, it was a bad moment for Kilman. It's the first time in a while for him.
I think it's like a psychological thing. I actually think he was a bit scared. You know, everyone talks about Haaland and he is unreal. And I think he was scared to engage and then get done. But I think that's the only goal for me, or the only time this season where we've looked suspect as a four, because I think Collins was well out of position as well. The gap between the centre halves was huge, I seem to remember. And I think it was more what happened before the ball even got to Haaland. I think we were well out of shape. I haven't watched it back for exactly the same reason. But I think Collins was well out of position. He must have been covering the right, so I'm assuming Johnny was out of position, or we just lost the ball, or, you know, we were having a transition that went wrong. And yeah, two centre-halves were miles apart, and then he didn't want to engage, I think, because he didn't want to get done. And I mean, yeah, he can even... Haaland is so good, he can miss it a shot and it still goes right in the corner and it's a goal from 20 yards. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I was going to say, Blake, that must have been one of the more frustrating things about it. Again, like I said, they swarmed us. So when that ball broke in the middle of the park, they just swept through us and we almost just didn't know how to reset ourselves. But the fact it wasn't actually that good a shot... That's got to have annoyed you a bit, Blake.
A little bit, but, you know, it's Haaland, and that's one of the things about the greatest players of this game. Even though they're not playing particularly well, they're still gonna get the job done, and it's exactly what Haaland did. And, I mean, I forgive Kilman a little bit because I think I agree with Tom. He's just scared that if he commits, he's going to get done. And, you know, Haaland, he hasn't really scored that much from outside the box, so I understand it to some degree. But at the end of the day, it's still Erling Haaland, and if you can't commit at all, he's going to do you, and it's pretty much what happened.
Yeah, and it felt like 2-0. I don't know, it did feel like it was a bit of a harsh scoreline for us. Because, again, like it felt like we were settling ourselves and like we were getting a couple of pop shots off here and there. And although... Did we ever really look like we were going to massively score? Not really, but we had a couple of half-decent chances.
You're referencing the season there, Rich, or is that just yesterday?
Just over the last 2 months. It feels like at the moment, doesn't it? It's pretty much just indicative, isn't it? Especially when you say you don't have a bloody striker. And then things got from, you know, bad to... Even worse when, you know, Jack Grealish got in the way of Nathan Collins's boot. I mean, I don't quite know what is Collins actually trying to do there.
I don't know if he's tried to volley the ball, completely shotted it and just followed through and got the man. I've watched it. This is the only bit of the match I've watched back because I don't understand what's happening. Like the flight of the ball, has he misjudged it? Or I honestly haven't got a clue what he's doing. I'd rather he's just run into him and took him out if that's what he was going to do. But I just don't get it.
I think he's tried to put a reducer on him. I think he's tried to take ball and man just to, you know, try and swing a bit of momentum or something like that. Or he's just had a complete rush of blood to the head. It's weird because I think on one still I see it's not actually, you know, it almost looks like he's trying to kick. Rather than put his foot down and almost like, you know, stamp. But yeah, I don't know what he's doing. But is it? I don't know. Isn't that his fourth red card of his career?
Yeah,
I think he's got a bit of that in him, I think, and that's just the inexperienced stuff. I still think he's a top quality centre half, but these are the things he's got to learn about.
Yeah, I mean, but Blake at the time, I know Tom, you got in an argument after during the game, even in terms of people defending it, saying it wasn't a red. Blake, did you have any suspicions it might get overturned, or we like me like, just what are we even doing?
No, I mean, I was watching on telly, and even just seeing it first time, it's just in today's game, it's straight. Well, in any version of the game, I think it's straight red. I mean, it's just, it's a high boot straight to the chest. What can every referee make of it? I mean, the only way that we're getting off with that is if somehow he's miscontact and Grealish is just being Grealish and flopping for nothing, but clearly that's not what happened. So yeah, it wasn't surprising on first viewing. It wasn't surprising on second viewing. It was about as straight red can be.
Yeah. Someone says in the YouTube comments, it's a free game all day. It did make me think of like how Football Manager, and to be fair, in real life, where you can like appeal red cards, but they can deem it frivolous, the appeal, and get an extra game. And I feel like an appeal for that challenge, that would be classed as frivolous.
Mm, absolutely. Like,
big time.
Yeah. David Walsh has come in with a comment, so I think this is quite a fun one. Reckon the sun was in Colin's eyes slightly, went for a ball and realised too late, Grealish was rushing in. Also, Grealish is going to handle the ball. And I am loving some of these comments, guys. Either defending the actions or, you know, putting some sense to it. Doesn't matter. If ever was a person to get whacked, then it was Greasy Grealish. And yeah. Still doesn't help us win the game, but that's what I mean. We talked about you know, Pep and Man City being really sharp on the tactical fouls and breaking up play, and I can see why Collins thought it might be a good idea to foul Grealish there, because you say he's already covering for Johnny, he's always had to step over, so he goes past him, he's got a lot of space to run in behind Grealish, so I can understand, you know, just taking him out, take the book in and found on the halfway line. I might even get away for booking. But then to do that, it just doesn't quite make sense. And yeah, I think from that, I think a lot of Wolves fans panicked, because frankly, we have zero squad depth. And we've always been like we are an injury or suspension away from pretty much any position that we're bookers. And it's already happened up top. And it kind of happened at the back as well, because I think we're all kind of expecting Mosquera or Toti Gomez to come on. But that isn't what happened. And, you know, all of a sudden you see, you know, Ruben Neves drop into a back four, which I was a big fan of, to be honest. I'm not going to lie. I thought if we, you know, when we used to play the back three, I think he's someone who'd retire into a sweeper position anyway. And I thought, okay, maybe we're just seeing it through to halftime so we can assess. But he plucked on. Guys, what did you think about having Ruben Neves at centre-half, as it were?
I mean, yeah, I think was terrified at first, because, like, he's a little bit physical, but he's not the biggest of guys. And you think up against someone like Erling Haaland, he could get pushed off the ball. He's not going to win many headers, you wouldn't imagine. But actually, his positional sense is exceptional. Like, you can see that he has modelled himself on Pirlo. You can tell that he's his hero, because his positional sense was actually really good. And I think he was only caught out of position at one point, which he then put a really good tackle in to almost score an own goal, but luckily it went for a corner.
Yeah, I didn't mind it. I think it helped us play out from the back, actually. I don't think we're starting a game. I don't think we should be having him start a game there. But I didn't mind it against City. But also, I think it shows you all you need to know what Larch thinks about his understudies at centre-back, that he's leaving the centre-mid there. And you don't move... You don't move your best player out of his best position, in my opinion. I always hated it when it was going back, like McCarthy days. Jarvis was our best player by country mile, and he couldn't play. Hunt couldn't play on the right, so he moved Jarvis, our best player, to the other side. And you don't do that. You don't move your best player at his best position. So he can't continue there. But I didn't mind it on Saturday. I didn't think it was that bad.
Maybe we should try him as striker next.
Yeah, he'd be the best. He'd be the best striker as well. He'd be the best centre half, the best midfielder, the best striker. Yeah. That's who he is. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's the issue, isn't it? I would say, Blake, do you think, in terms of the younger guys coming on, do you think it was a bit of a message to the board? Because Bruno came out after a game and saying, "Oh well, we're still in the market for a defender on a free transfer with a bit of experience." And as Tom said, to play your best player essentially out of position, in a position he's got no experience in, despite having, you know, Gomez's like 5 games or whatever his first last season, you've got two players who are positionally natural in that position. For them not to come on, that's got to be a, you know, screaming at something, whether it's for two players who are on the bench not good enough or the board to bring in more players.
It's complicated, I think, especially when you're playing Man City. You know, I think that for as harsh as we want to be on Bruno, we did play fairly well for the first 15, 20 minutes of the second half, which is more than I thought we were even going to come close to doing. So to me, do we really want to bring on Toni Gomez when we're sort of keeping possession, actually playing fairly well, down to 10 men against Man City? I don't think that's the right time. Now, you might say at halftime or something you should bring him on. I get that, but it's Man City. And I mean, this is a team which is going to properly tear you apart even when they're taking their foot off the gas. So I certainly understand the hesitation of bringing on someone who's more young and inexperienced, especially since Neves did so well in the position. As for if this keeps happening in the future, yeah, it definitely would be. But against Manchester City, I think it's a little more complicated than that.
Yeah. Do you know what my little tin hat theory behind it was? We all know Pep's a bit of an overthinker, don't we? So you've seen what happens when he gets to the latter stage of the Champions League. His mind crumbles under the weight of what potentially could happen. And I think seeing Ruben Neves play centre-half made him kind of go, that's going to be different. They're going to want to keep possession more. That means we're going to have to play things a little bit slower. Whereas I think maybe you could say naturally he was more inclined to bring on Mosquera because he's a right-sided centre-half. He'd have gone, that's an inexperienced centre-half. I'm just going to allow Erling Haaland just to maul him for the next 55 minutes or however long the game was left. But it kind of worked for, again, the reasons Lars gave afterwards. You know, the plan was to continue with Ruben as a centre-back, to continue with the ball and push the two midfielders more into the game, and continue with Pedro and Guedes to push the line of four and kind of go for more of a 4-4-1. So I do get the logic behind it, to say it's only a real issue if, you know, say we're lining up after the international break with it. But hopefully it gives us 2 weeks for either Gomez or Mosquera to, you know, prove you should be alongside Max Kilman. But Blake, you did strike on it, but after the sending off, for the rest of the first half and going into the second half, we looked a bit of all right. We're doing really well at, you know, beating Man City's press quite a few times and looking dangerous in the middle third of the pitch.
Yeah, we were creating great chances. And I think that had we have had a true number nine, we would have scored. It's just that without someone up front to really do the business, we're really just requiring a fluke. And against Man City, there are no flukes. So it was just never really going to happen. And sure enough, they score their third. But, you know, I think there's a lot of promise in this team. It's just there are those little key players and moments that we need to start getting right. I don't exactly know how that's going to come. I mean, this may feed into our discussion about Bruno Lage in general, but it just feels like the pieces are there. They're just not quite built correctly.
Yeah. Paul in the comments makes an interesting point. Something we put out on Twitter earlier, in terms of saying, Wolves were doing all right, and try have a sliver of optimism. He goes, because City took their foot off the gas. which I think's fair. I mean, in terms of the balance, Andy, do you think it was Wolves doing a bit of all right, or City taking it a little bit easy on us for, you know, the middle portion of the game?
A little bit of both, to be perfectly honest, because I think City did take their foot off the gas in an attacking sense, because I think when we went down to 10, they could have easily put us to the sword and got 5-6. But they knew the game was won, to be perfectly honest. What City wouldn't, and what Pep wouldn't accept, is to concede any shitty, silly goals. So I think defensively, they did what they needed to do in order to stop us. But I think attacking, I agree with Paul, I think it was, they did take the foot off the gas in that sense. But they still kept a very high line, and we did try to exploit that, which was the only way we were going to get any joy, was to try and play over the top and into their back, their final third. And we did okay, but as Blake rightly pointed out, when we got into the positions where we could cross it in or try and run into the box, there was nothing. The number of times that the ball broke down one of the wings, and then you'd look into the centre and you'd have 5-foot-nothing Daniel Pedence standing about 20 yards out. You'd have Pedro Neto or Guedes on the opposite side, just sort of hanging around just on the corner of the box. But no one was busting a gut to get into the middle. Without a striker, we never caused any problems. So I think it was a little bit of both, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Yeah. Should we talk about the attacking players then? Because, yeah, as Andy said, the amount of, it was like they're scared of all three of them going in the box at the same time.
We can't play with three what are effectively wide attacking players. It doesn't work. We need a central attacking player. And obviously Jimenez has proven that he's broken still. It's really, really sad. But like, we just can't be sentimental about these things, unfortunately. Obviously, Kolasinac has come in and he's got broken immediately. And Diego Costa is, what, 2-3 weeks away from being semi-fit, let alone full fit. So we're in a really difficult position at the moment. That, what do you do? Do you go with this false number nine, which, as you've said before, Rich, is it a false number nine, or is he just playing a midfielder up front? And it looks like it's a midfielder up front.
Yeah. When I was watching Match of the Day, I did manage to get a cheeky screenshot. I do have my TV license, so I think I'm entitled to take the screenshot. But they've had it for the Shot Shy Wolves, and it's from since the start of last season. But we've had the 17th most shots on target, goals, and shot conversion. And we're kind of ranked 17th in all four of those categories, guys. I mean, it's just like, we don't take many shots, and the ones we do aren't particularly good either. It's the numbers just simply don't lie. We just don't, unfortunately, have the players to score goals on a consistent and regular basis, or even attempt at scoring goals.
Yeah, you're right. The numbers don't lie, and they spell disaster for us. We are in such a precarious situation at the moment. I don't want to talk about relegation or any of that nonsense, but the problem is, if you don't score goals, you're not going to win games.
So 3 shots on average per game?
Shots on target.
Oh, a shot on target per average. That's pathetic. I'm sorry, it's pathetic. I did a little bit of, again, it was probably preempting the talk on Bruno, but I might as well bring it up now. But so 45 games under Bruno, we scored 41 goals, which is pathetic. Just some sort of relativity. I looked up Burnley's last 45 games and they've scored 42. So they scored more than us. That's anti-football, time-wasting Burnley. And I'm not aboard the dice train like Stu, but I mean, that sums it up for me. It's just 41 goals in 45 games. We were promised this attacking football and all this crap. And it's been a load of rubbish.
Yeah, it's just simply not sustainable. But that's my thing. And I know, like Stu says, he left Benfica because he couldn't address a slump and stuff like that. And I get it. But whether it's where you spread those goals over, you know, peaks or troughs or average, you're just not going to win the football games to do anything. And this is a side who, you say on paper, I don't think there's any bad players in that first 11 for Wolves yesterday. All of them are really good players. But I'd argue that at least one of those attacking front three needs to be dropped for a decent striker. And then you've actually got a good team who can do the most important thing in a football match, which is score goals to win games.
And a mate of mine watched it on BT, and he said he was genius, summed it up perfectly. I mean, I'm not a massive Jermaine Genius fan, but he said technically we look really, really good, but we're so easy to play against because we've got absolutely nothing up front. So it's, they're just the easiest team to defend against. Let them do what they want in the middle. And I do think, genuinely, second half, I think we played really well. Well, no, the really well is an exaggeration, but I think we were very brave and we tried to play the right way. And we look decent in the middle because we've got good midfielders, but it gets up top and it's a waste of time.
Mm. I think when you look at the attacking zones and stuff over most of the last sort of 18 months, there seems to be a horseshoe effect around the opposition's goal. We're really good going up and down and around, but when you get to that 18-yard box, there's just nothing. There's no passes into the box, then there's no shots coming from inside the box. If you look at the vast majority of the shots that we've had this season, they've all been from range. And like, we're just not going to score that many goals from range. We might get one thunder bastard like we got with Neves against Newcastle, but it's once in a lifetime kind of things in football. It's just not going to take us forward.
It's so interesting because I've lost that anticipation of, oh, we could actually score here when we're in the box, because I just know for a fact that it's just not happening. It's gone. I mean, we've scored 3 goals this season so far. 2 of them have been complete flukes. It's just, it's ridiculous. And, well, it'll be interesting to see how this moves forward, because now all we've got to perhaps even possibly solve it is Diego Costa, who hasn't even played football in 2022. So, I mean, we are in some trouble here for the next couple of months. And that's even assuming that we're going to sign somebody else in January, which we may not. I mean, it's just, it's going to be really interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah, I think what one thing I was sort of thinking about is like looking back to what chances we've had in games combined. Apart from Podence's maybe first game of the season, I can't remember how many like clear cut chances we've had 8 to 10 yards out. We just don't like that aren't maybe from set piece. We just don't get players in and around the box. Well, no, we get them around the box. We're really good at getting them like around the box, but then just no one actually in the box to, you know, score. And it just makes me kind of question again, loaning out Fabio Silva.
It looks like such a fuck up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
At the time we questioned it, and now it just looks like an even worse decision than it already was.
Yeah, no, you can't factor in your new signing tearing his ACL half an hour into his debut. I appreciate that, apart from his questionable injury record beforehand. But no one can tell me Fabio Silva didn't do enough last season to justify being basically in rotation with Jimenez this season. Unless Silva outrightly said, no, I want to be starting games, the majority of games. And as I say, we're then left with this really tricky situation where we've just got to hope Diego Costa manages to get match fit in 2 weeks before our next game over the international break. And I kind of don't see that happening, you know, unless we've got 2 or whatever behind closed doors friendlies. We're asking for a minor miracle, aren't we? Yeah. In terms of a couple of, I've pulled up Bruno Lage after the game. He said he saw good signs. That's the most important thing. I'd argue against that personally. You know, there's not too many teams in the world with 10 men that can do what we did against this top team. When you start the game like that, the team suffers. We had good moments, and the second goal came in a transition when we didn't recover the ball on the second phase and they score. I'm not saying Man City completely took their foot off the gas, because we've seen what they do to teams if they want to. The same as Liverpool, when we're on the warpath, they're not going to stop because they're 2-0, 3-0 up. That's a I was going to say that's a Europa League mentality, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what we sometimes see as a fan, rather than, you know, what these teams are going to do. Last one I wanted to cover before we have a really quick break was, although he's not started the season well, Pedro Neto hit 100 games for Wolves on Saturday. Obviously not how he'd have chosen to celebrate it, but I thought it's definitely worth a bit of recognition, because although, let's say, the season's not been great and he's come back off a terrible injury, you still kind of do hope that he is somewhat the future of this Wolves team if he can find his form again.
I don't know. I'd be quite happy to flog him, to be perfectly honest, for the money. He's shown that he was a light in a very dark period of time during the no fan football era, but I don't think I've seen him have a great game for us. He's okay. And if you look at his metrics now, they're very similar to what they were pre-injury. Yeah. So really the only difference is that he's doing exactly what he was before, but now he just looks a bit shit. Like, well done on getting 100 games, mate, but I don't know if I'd rather have the money and reinvest it elsewhere now.
Interestingly, as I set up the wave of positivity, hoping that one of you would come crashing down to reality with it, the most amount of goals he's actually scored in a campaign for us is 5. In that first, I say, essentially COVID season 2019-2020, he got 5 goals in 44 games, because we had the Europa League run, he got a couple of goals in that. Then he got 5 goals in 35 games the season afterwards, when it was all behind closed doors before he got his injury. So, you know, he was averaging about just over 1 in 6 in the Premier League in that breakout season. But even still, sort of 1 in 6 isn't necessarily quite high enough for what we need, especially when none of our other players are scoring goals, I guess.
It doesn't really create a lot of chances either. Sorry,
it's Tom. As I say, his touch is off. His touch is miles off. It bounces. It looks like Wang.
There was one bit yesterday, wasn't there? He tried to trap it in the box and he just rolled straight to their play. It was awful.
It was so bad, yeah. And I can't remember the last time he hit a clean shot as well. He had that one, was it first half? He just dragged it. Yeah. He had the one against Southampton, he dragged. It's frustrating. I'm hoping it comes for him, but it looks like it's been space jammed to me. I don't know what's happened. It's bizarre. I'm not going as far as what I said. What Andy said there. I think there is a really good player in there. I think he's got what you need. You know, he's quick. Generally, his touch is good, or at least it was. He's not a player that's going to get you a load of goals, I don't think. But none of our players seem to be so. And he's a wing. He looked better at his best game of the season was against Leeds, wasn't it? And he was on the left because he wants to. It's not suiting him on the right. You need to take him out. But again, he's having to be moved to accommodate other players. Frustrating.
Yeah. Do you think, like, he's someone who very much needs the international break to give him a bit of a chance to? I might think he's actually been called up to the Portugal squad. Mm-hmm. I made that up. Mm-hmm. So me hoping he gets a couple of weeks at Compton to work on the stuff. But do you think actually a couple of weeks away from league football is going to hopefully help him come back on the right path before the next kind of run of fixtures?
Well, we just had a couple of weeks with the current circumstances, so I mean that didn't seem to turn anything up. And granted, I know international football is a little bit different, but I don't know. We'll just kind of have to wait and see. I don't really think the international break really gives players that much of a chance to do anything, really. So, I mean, it could, but I don't know. Everything about this team has seemed so silly this season that I'm not convinced of anything at this point. And am I really to believe that Pedro Neto is just going to completely turn around by our next fixture? I don't see it happening personally.
No. Unfortunately, me neither, to be honest. We're going to take a short break, guys. And after this, we're going to talk about Bruno Lage's future and answer a couple of questions from Twitter Corner. We'll be back in about 45 seconds.
Hi all, Gully from Wolves Fancast here, and just like all of you long-suffering Wolves fans, I know exactly what it feels like to be lacking a creative spark here, some outside-of-the-box thinking there, but our sponsors Pixel Yeti Media are here to help. They're a creative agency that cover all of your web design, branding and marketing needs, with our very own WolvesFancast.com, a fine example of their work. So much so that I hear Jeff Shee is looking to do a deal this summer. For now, it's back to the team to ask just where the Diogo Jota money is gone. We may have just had our answer.
Welcome back, everybody. So, as I was kind of alluding to before break, I appreciate we're against Man City, but it somewhat feels, if you're going off social media, that the tide is starting to very much turn against Bruno Lage. We spoke about it after the draw to Bournemouth, where we had a bit of a rant cast with Stu and Dan on there, and Defoe. And I think it kind of quelled when we beat Southampton. And, of course, without the Liverpool game, we've kind of had a bit of time without playing much football. But I'm still hearing lots of Bruno out calls. A few people still supporting him as well. But I guess my question to you guys is there anything realistically that you think Bruno can do to turn this team around? The big thing that we are, you know, Bruno himself said we need a reference point up front. And it's very clear we're missing a natural striker who can push a team an extra 10-15 yards into the box and give them something to think about. And you could argue it sort of worked against Southampton in the first half with Sasa Kalajdzic, but we don't have that anymore. And I guess my question, a different way of phrasing it then, is if a new manager comes in, what would they be able to do differently that Bruno Lage isn't doing? Because we're still kind of hamstrung with the same players, apart from maybe Diego Costa being back fit in a couple of weeks, same with maybe Jimenez after a break as well. But I think it's always a tricky one when you potentially get rid of someone mid-season.
Yeah, I think the thing with the reference point, you know, said I need reference. It's obvious, yeah. We all know, we can all see that, and we're not disputing what you're saying there. He had one last season, and the same one as well, and he still only scored 38 goals. It seems to me that he changed to four at the back, which you're all screaming for, fine. But it seems like he just thought that would magically just solve all our problems, when it clearly hasn't. There's still something fundamentally wrong up front. You know, okay, I'm not a football manager, but surely there's something, you know, that you can do other than just stick an extra body up there. Because all it looks like to me is that he's just stuck an extra body up there. The pattern of play is the same as what it was last season. We still look like a team who's trying to quick in transition and tries to counter. I can't see anything different he's done other than change the shape and expected just the same results. And yeah, he's changed a couple of, you know, again, he's changed personnel as well. So, you know, you'd have thought maybe that'd help. You've got a ball-carrying midfielder now, and he is a ball-carrying midfielder. We've seen that, you know, and I thought he had a half-decent game yesterday. But it's still, that's what what he was trying to do with Dendonka last season. He's still playing the midfield three in the same way he was playing the midfield three last season. And he's again, the shape's similar up front, really, isn't it? So, you know, he's got a body there that he's not really doing much extra with in regard to output. In fact, the output's worse than last season. And that's depressing enough in itself.
It doesn't look like there's going to be any goals coming from that midfield three, other than absolute worldies. And that's always going to be an issue. If you're reliant on one player to get all of your goals, you're going to be in trouble. I don't know what it is. It feels like he's got the right pieces, but maybe not in the right place. I don't know. I mean, Nunes is definitely an upgrade on Dendonka. He's a player who can influence in the middle of the park. You saw that yesterday, but without that focal point, it was all for naught, really. So I honestly don't know what the issue is, because there is clearly, as Tom said, a fundamental problem with this team. Because that back four, we look as solid now as we did last season, to be perfectly honest. We don't look any weaker for having dropped a player there. But how have we gained a player forward of that back line and it not have changed anything at all? Is it because that Jimenez got injured pre-season, so he hasn't had a pre-season, and now we're playing catch-up with him to the point that he's injured now? Obviously, Diego Costa is a non-entity so far this season. And then Kaladzic is also another issue. So is it just that Jimenez isn't the man for that role? And once we do get the right man in there, things will happen? I honestly don't know what the answer is. Part of me wants them to just try switching the wingers over, because I'm not convinced with Neto on the right and Guirez on the left. It's good that they can cut in and shoot, but they don't seem to be good enough to actually pull off great goals. So maybe playing them wide, and then you can actually get balls into the box, especially when you've got someone like Diego Costa who loves that kind of shit. That's his game, is trying to get in there. But if you're playing with inverted wingers, you're not going to get the best out of a Diego Costa, because he's not going to be flinging himself at any balls coming into the box, is he? So I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just a case of he needs to tweak a few things. But it's just the whole reign of Bruno has felt like he's been playing catch-up. All of last season, it felt like it was Nuno's team under Bruno, and we'll be okay. We're in transition, but we'll be okay. And then this year, we didn't get the players in the summer, so we've been playing catch-up, trying to sign them during the season. Then they get injured, so we're playing catch-up with the replacement, who then gets injured. So we're playing catch-up with the new replacement. It almost feels like we're always two steps behind where we need to be with Bruno. Whether that's poor management or bad luck, I don't know what the answer is, but something's got to give.
Yeah, I think that's sort of my trail of thought, Andy, in terms of, is it bad luck or bad judgment? Because Bruno was kind of fairly open last pre-season, his first year, wasn't he, in terms of what he wanted to do and what the limitations were. But we have spent an awful lot of money in the summer, and I thought Gonzalo Guedes had a decent enough game. He's shown a large amount of promise.
Best game yet, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I kind of go, is he necessarily what we needed in the grand scheme of things, though? But then we get into Sasa Kladnic. So, but there wasn't any of the areas, pre-injury and whatever, where we go, we've improved our centre-half department, in terms of getting in Nathan Collins, who allows us to do have a bit of variation. Although the irony of Connor Cody apparently having a great game today, captaining Everton in the middle of a back four, the irony is not lost on me. We bring in Matheus Nunes, record signing. Again, what we've been screaming out for donkeys, and getting a new striker in as well. I think the only one that was maybe a bit of an outsider was Guedes, but again, he ticks a lot of boxes in terms of what we look for in this team. But you're right, we've kind of always seemed to be a bit reactive in terms of what we want to do. Blake, how are you looking at the situation around Larch at the moment?
I think it's one of those things where, especially when you can't really pinpoint it, it almost always falls on the manager. I mean, you can't fire the whole team, so you have to do something. And I think I think if this keeps up, the axe is inevitably going to fall on Bruno. I think West Ham's going to be a big, big moment for him. I don't know. It's strange because I don't think any of us would have really said that Bruno was going to be a perfect long-term fit for Wolves. It's not as if we were jumping for joy when he was announced in the first place. So is he someone that we really want to take a risk on keeping him on and seeing how he can do over the next season or the next few seasons? I don't know, especially considering his track record, as Andy has sort of said, it feels like it's always been catch up, and there are certainly reasons for that. But at the end of the day, especially the Premier League is unbelievably results driven, and we just have not been getting the results. And if it continues like this, even for the next couple of games, I think he just has to go, and we just have to try something else and see if it gives vigor to these players. I mean, that's one of the things you ask is another manager going to be able to give you something else? It's like, okay, he might not be able to do something different tactically, but but he might be able to give the players some sort of step up or vigor or eagerness that we just don't have under Bruno right now.
Yeah, I'm very much in agreement with that. For I say, well, what can another manager do? Because the personnel hasn't changed, and I don't. What I can't quite work out is, will a new manager motivate, say, Pedro Neto to burst into the box a bit more, or, you know, Daniel Podence to try and nip between two centre halves on the 6-yard line? And I don't quite know. And I kind of go, well, if another manager comes in with a relatively similar philosophy, because they will do, then you can't really get lumped in the same situation that all these players are a bit, you say, technically very good, but not ruthless. I mean, Paul in the comments has popped up saying, you know, the pedigree is the top manager, he has to come in. Tom, do you see any likelihood of that happening? I know Seville haven't started great, I don't think, in the league. Do you think it would be, you know, 6 years on from the fact or whatever it is now?
Yeah, I think their XG is worse than ours. I wasn't against it in the summer. But if you look, if you delve into his recent record, it's quite. He's gone a bit nooner. He's gone quite negative by all accounts, and they play in the middle third of the pitch, and not much else. So it'd be a bit of a gamble. Although I think I agree with Blake, if it doesn't change in the next few games, something has to give, and you just got to give it another crack with something different. You talked about philosophy there, and he came in with a philosophy of. Or, you know, with the reputation of attacking coach develops young players. And I know Stu made this point in the group earlier. As he develops our young players, I'd say absolutely not at all. Aitnori was mildly better, wasn't he? Let's be fair, he was better last season than he had been. But he had what, 8 games where we had nothing really to play for, and he to blood Fabio ahead of a broken role. And he hasn't done it. So where's this developing youth players comes from? There's definitely no attacking football on show. So all this promise that, you know, that he had when he first came in just hasn't materialised. And he hasn't got any excuses now because he's got the players. Yes, okay, they were brought in a bit later than he wanted, which is fair enough. But he doesn't help himself at all. He doesn't sit. I don't think the fans have really taken to him, or there's not the connection with the fans that we saw. I know Nuno's probably a different ball game, but there's not really anything at all. He doesn't really acknowledge the fans. Doesn't really do too much. He talks a lot of shit in press conferences, media. I mean, what was that bollocks about Raul and Sasha coming back? Oh, they'll be fine for Liverpool. It's been what, 4 weeks, and Raul's not back now. And Sasha's out for 9 months, so I don't know what the hell he was talking about there. So he just doesn't. And then the rankled me a little bit with it. He said about Costa. I'm sure he said something like, "Oh, hopefully we'll see the Costa that was tearing it up, like, you know, when he was playing for Chelsea." And I think you're just setting the guy up to fall on his face. You know, you're getting the fans all whooped up expecting him to be, you know, the player he was. And, you know, I think everyone accepts that he's not going to be that player. But, I mean, if he's 60, 70% of that player, we'll take it. But, yeah, I think he... Coach, maybe, management material. I'm not convinced, to be honest.
Nuno was a miserable bastard who spoke a lot of shit as well. But we've been winning underneath him. And I think that makes all the difference in the world. You can talk all the shit you want as long as you're getting 10 points at the end of it. And that's not what Bruno's been doing. He's not been picking up the points. And that's how a manager lives or dies. It's on the wins, not anything else, unfortunately. But I was just looking at the next rut of games we've got when we get back. West Ham, Chelsea, Forest, Palace, Leicester. Then you've got Brentford, Brighton and Arsenal taking us up to the World Cup. So those are games, apart from probably Chelsea away, where you would be looking to really establish where we're going. Is he going to be there at West Ham? Is the big question that I put to you three now. Do you stick with him? in the hopes that by the time we get to West Ham on the 1st of October, that we've got a fit Diego Costa, and do you have the faith in him to take us forward? I personally think he gets up until the Arsenal game before the World Cup. What do you think then?
Oh, I think he gets the next three. I think if we don't pick up at least four points, and I'll add the caveat of scoring more than like two goals, I think he goes. I don't think it can carry on. You know, if we get a, you know, we get a sort of like a 0-0 at West Ham, a loss to Chelsea, and a 1-0 win against Forest, he might just about save his bacon. But I mean, it wouldn't be. I still think the jury be out for me.
I think that he has to get a point against West Ham for me. I think if we lose to West Ham, we are in, I wouldn't say dire straits, but it's clear that something needs to be done. And as much as I appreciate what Bruno has done, it doesn't really seem to me like giving him the whole season is really going to be, I don't think it's going to have that much potential to it. And I don't see Bruno being long-term a great manager for Wolves. I'm just going to have to say it right here, right now. And, you know, if he can turn things around, great. If we can get, you know, 6-7 points in these next three games, then sure, keep him on board. But I think that he really needs to step it up now. And if he can't, then we just need to try something different, because what other options do we have? Wait till January for the transfer window to reopen and then maybe get a striker that might work? I just don't know. And I just think that in the immediate future, when we have so limited options, and we're admittedly, we are what, 17th in the table now? 17th, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're really flirting with danger here. And I don't think we're going to get relegated even still. But I mean, we can't do that. That is the one thing that we just cannot do. And if there's any risk, I think we do have to say goodbye to Bruno.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm kind of in between both camps in a way. I think if you are getting to mid-October, I think about four games for me, because I think Chelsea's, I'd normally say it's a bit of a write-off, but also expecting Diego Costa to be fit by then. And it's just written in the stars he'd score against Chelsea. And he'd score a winning goal. So, you know, narrative aside, but again, about West Ham, not losing that game is imperative, but it's also the performances. And, you know, in Derby, saying in the comments, you know, 1-14, you guys give him 3 games. And I do get it. And I think we've spoken previously, you know, do we count last season's games and things like that? But there are some eminently winnable games, I'd like to say, between now and the World Cup break, in the, you know, what is it, 8 fixtures and a League Cup tie, of which, apart from Chelsea and Arsenal, all the other teams we are facing are mid-table or lower. And by what I mean, like, they're not a top 6 side. And I don't know. I think Bruno can be a bit of a streaky manager, or he was for us last season. But that comes with inconsistencies as well. So part of me does go, you know what? I could see us going on a 6-match unbeaten run in the next 6 games. It might not be, it won't be pretty, and it will probably be like, you know, 3 wins and 3 draws spread sporadically, and we'd probably not deserve at least 5 of those points. But I can see something like that happening. I'd maybe give him up to the World Cup break, maybe. But I think if we end up losing the next 3, then we're 10 games, you know, I think enough of the season's gone to make a decision at that point. So I think, yeah, these next 3 games are going to be very interesting for Wolves, and hopefully it'll be interesting to see what the mood changes around the squad and on social media, as we say, and the general atmosphere around the club post-international break, and see how we do against West Ham. But I've got 3 questions from Twitter Corner for you guys. Let's see who's up first. Gaz Roberts asks, is this the most boring Wolves side to watch since Glenn Hoddle? And I've been having my brains out. No. And I don't think it is, surely.
Nuno's final season was more boring. Because we weren't even there to be bored for it either. So that didn't help having to watch it on TV.
There's a jacket nil-nils as well. That was pretty
that was gonna be my shout when we had like 3 nil-nils at home in a row or something silly.
Mm.
At least you can see like Neves pick out like a 70-yard ping. I mean, we didn't have that back then. You'd have George Saville passing it out of play from 10 yards. So at least you're getting a little bit of entertainment.
Yeah, I can at least see there's quality on show with this one. Next up, still with V, who I believe might be on the YouTube comments, judging by the handle. So 4 years ago, Willy Bolly got a 3-match ban and a straight red card in a 3-0 loss to Man City. Collins has surely repeated that feat. Which Wolves player is most likely to be at the club and commit the ceremonial horror tackle versus City in 2026-27?
Totti Gomez? I'd probably Chem Campbell.
Ooh.
Yeah, he'll lose his head and take a swing at whichever centre-half he's up against at that point.
Well, like a 38 or 39 year old Diego Costa.
Exactly.
A big old headbutt.
What about you, Blake?
Yeah, Diego Costa, cane in hand, smashing it against whichever city player he chooses.
Lovely. Last but not least, then, gents, we have one from Martin. What would you queue 24 hours for?
Absolutely nothing. Goal. I'm not that mental. Yeah, Wolves goal.
A half-decent Wolves performance.
Being able to deliver a Ben Collins-style kick to Grealish.
Yes.
Yeah, shout. Yeah.
I enjoy that very much. We'll wrap it there for today, folks. I guess we're not going to be back for a little while unless we decide to do something fun and interesting over the international break. But we will be back to preview what's looking like a very tense game against West Ham on the 1st of October. So just wake me up when September ends. I was waiting to try and pull that in, Andy, when you said it earlier when you're doing the countdown, and I then lost my nerve on it. But big shout out to our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media and Ninety Min and Pixel Yeti Media. Also, if you are in town, make sure you check out Chicaro's on Broad Street. You can get 20% off there using the discount code FANCAST20, or just showing them your season ticket. Make sure you keep up to date with all things Wolves and Wolves Fancast on our socials. That's at Wolves Fancast. And if you are watching on YouTube, make sure you like, share, and subscribe as well. Until next time, it's goodbye from Blake.
See you.
It's goodbye from Tom.
Bye all.
Goodbye from Andy.
Ta-ra.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next time.